Hey, everybody. We're Bob and Audrey, a husband and wife team.
And this is our podcast all about relationships.
We are marriage and relationship enthusiasts, believing there is a God-given design to thrive in both life and love.
And we think that Jesus is amazing and worth following with everything you have. On this podcast, we are putting together the truths and best practices we have learned over our 35 years of marriage, and more specifically, over the past 18 years, where we have spent our lives helping people love their relationships.
After getting through our own family crisis, we became passionate about rescuing and mentoring others. We have authored numerous books and developed on-demand courses that can be found on our website, lovemarriedlife.com.
And with all that said, let's dive into the episode for this week.
Hey, everybody, Bob and Audrey here. This is episode number 6. And today we're going to talk about covering. And that was a whole new concept for me. When we were going through, a marriage, our marriage crisis. And in fact, we wrote our first book, and it was entitled Marriage Undercover, Thriving in a Culture of Quiet Desperation. So we want to talk about the covering and how that really played out, in our marriage, but just what an image, the imagery of it.
And it's sort of a line that we use often in friendships and say, hey, I've got you covered.
I've got you covered.
I'm not going to let that, I've got your back.
Yeah.
And, I'm not going to, that's something that we use in friendships and with our family. When your family, it's kind of like, I'm going to be the mama bear, or I'm going to cover you and make sure that you're not shamed and you're not exposed and you're not, and that people are not allowed to treat you badly. That's sort of what it feels like when someone says, I've got you covered.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important dynamic in many close relationships to make sure that we cover each other and that they feel that security of knowing that no matter what, we're in this together. You are not alone.
Mm-hmm. I'm just so grateful for the people that were able to help along, in their journey to wholeness. And that's, really what we do, whether it's, in conferences, seminars, or people coming to our home for an intensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, in the last year or so, and they've become very good friends of ours, but Chris came in and I remember afterwards he's saying, I was really hoping that I would have a covering moment with my wife.
Yeah.
He had known our story and he just really wanted to have that covering moment. And it's kind of like, it's nothing that you can really manufacture, but when it happens and you're able to actually illustrate that with each other, it's something that stays with you. Proverbs 25 and verse 2, it says, it's God's glory to conceal a matter and for a king to discover its understanding. So this is where that principle of covering comes in. And when we cover one another, we protect one another.
Mm-hmm.
We defend one another. But as well, another element of covering is where there's been a wound, where possibly you've been cut, you've been wounded, but then you go immediately to cover that wound.
Yeah,
that
like this
injury.
Even happens in a physical situation.
Oh, yeah.
Like if I cut my arm or something, I mean, seriously, within a second, my arm is on that cut and I'm holding it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so you cover it.
Yeah.
But then you'll clean that wound, you'll suture it, but then you bandage it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? To promote healing.
Mm.
So in covering, these are two of several different components of covering. But, one is to defend, to fight for, to protect. But then the second is to promote healing. And so in covering, that's what I was being asked. Would I cover my wife, Audrey? That was what I was being asked, that I would cover you, that I'd fight for you, that I'd defend you, that I would not expose you, that I would not shame you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just me being asked to do that, but recognizing that's what God does for me.
Yeah.
He covers me. He fights for me. Even when I'm all messed up, even when I make mistakes, he doesn't shame me. He covers me. And so and it's even what a power. Even those,
I just was thinking about all the illustrations I've read in the Bible that we... that he is my covering. Like I was thinking of Psalm, I think it's 91, that it's just escaping me right now how it all goes. But I come under the shelter of the Most
High. He that dwells.
That's it. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High shall abide under the shadow mm-hmm. of the Almighty. That's a really special covering verse for me personally.
Right.
Because I can see myself going, wow, in this world is scary sometimes, God. Like sometimes I just want to run away and escape. But you are my secret place. And I can come close to you and you cover me. You know me. You understand me. And you make sure that no harm can come near me.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just pull this out. You brought up the illustration, and the imagery that is shared there in Psalm 91 is first revealed in the story of Lot, and it speaks about the two angels that came, and it was, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah was, I mean, it was so perverse. It was a right. horrible place, and he is the righteous one there.
Mm-hmm.
And God wants to rescue their family out of this place. And these angels come and visit, and the men of the city come, and they want to have, you know, sexual relations with these angels. And I mean, it is just horrible,
yeah.
horrible, horrible situation. But here's what Lot does. Lot, because they had entered, they had crossed the threshold, they had come under the shelter of his home, Lot steps out and speaks to the men of the community. And he says, you will do no such thing.
Because in that day and age, your home is, you are covered.
So he steps out and he says, you will do no such thing. And he says, I have two virgin daughters. And this is a very confusing passage for so many people, because it sounds as though Lot would offer, you know, his daughters to these people.
Right, which is like so weird.
So weird. But what Lot is actually saying, he says, I will defend these guests. I will fight for them. They have crossed the threshold of my home. They are dwelling under my shelter, under my protection. I will defend them to the death, to the extent that I would defend and fight for my daughters. You think you're going to get my daughters?
Not a chance.
Oh, no. Oh that can you imagine
now
how
that
a
makes
father
more sense. Yes.
would fight for his two virgin daughters?
To the
daughters?
Death.
I mean, to the death.
You would fight for our daughter to the death.
So this is what Lot is saying. To that extent, I will fight for these guests. How huge is that? Then that phrasing, that Hebrew phrasing there isn't spoke about until Psalm 91.
Oh.
He that dwells under the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty.
Wow.
So when the enemy comes knocking at the door of your life and he wants to ravage you, he wants to have his way with
steal.
You, he wants to rob from you, steal and destroy your life. King Jesus answers the door as Lot did. And he steps outside.
Yeah.
King Jesus steps outside and he
yes.
says, you think you're going to get my son or my daughter? No, you'll have to go through me. I will defend them to the death. And he did. And he did. His life, his death, his resurrection is mine. I'm going to abide under the shadow of the Almighty. That's covering. That's
That's powerful. So intense.
So intense.
Wow. And it applies to my life today, because when something happens in my life, a situation, then I can say, Jesus, can you get the door? He says, wait a minute, Audrey, you sit down.
Abide in me.
Yeah, abide in me.
Abide in me.
You're in my house. You're under my shelter.
Yeah, John 16, abide.
Yeah.
Those that abide.
I live.
The only responsibility that I have is to abide.
Yeah. And he says, I'm just going to go get the door. Let me deal with it.
I've got you covered.
Yes.
I will defend you. I will fight for you. I'll promote healing in your life. I'll get you out of here.
I love it.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is.
So that's covering. And
that's the kind of friend I want to have. There's one decree.
That's the kind of friend I want to be.
Yeah.
You see, Jesus is that for me.
Yes.
Then I'll be that for you.
Something that I often say is, Jesus, your eternal plan protects me, and your friendship vindicates me, and your presence is my sweet and calm retreat.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful.
That's my covering. That's something that I say often.
Yeah.
But when I was thinking about it just yesterday, Bob, I was on my walk with our dog Winston, and I was thinking, his friendship vindicates me. And when I think of the word vindication, it means, you know what, I might have even blown it, or I might not have made the best choices. But just because he's my best friend, his friendship with me vindicates me. And his eternal plan protects me. I can go way up high into his eternal plan, knowing that I'm protected. And his presence is my sweet and calm retreat.
Yeah. So let me roll this over then into, relationships. But what about a parent, relationship with their children? You see, as a parent, I want to fight for my child.
Mm.
I want to cover my child.
Yes.
Never, ever shame my child.
That's right.
And I'm going to make it easy for my child to come home because I've got them covered, and I'll do everything that I can to promote healing in their life.
And in my conversations with my child, I'm not going to be telling them what's wrong with them. I'm going to be telling them what's right with them all day long. This is what I see that's right with you. This is what I see that's right with you. And I see them rise up to be the real them. That's sort of you and I's terminology. Mm-hmm. That's the real Christopher. That's the real Janelle. That's the Janelle that's the worshiper. That's our David. That's our Robert.
Yeah, yeah. So let's jump into our story.
Yeah.
Where this happened with us.
Mm-hmm.
And
we talk with so much faith now, Bob. Now we have to go back. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we'll go back
18 years ago.
When we were, this was all new.
We
to
were
us.
Broken. We could hardly put two words together during a day. We were in so much pain. But you know what's cool, Bob, is that we're able to go back in our memory and go as if I was living that. Not that I'm not healed now, but I can go back and remember how that felt.
Yeah. And so you were about 4 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids really didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, they had no idea.
We had resigned our position in ministry in Winnipeg. We had sold our home. We had left the church that we had founded. It was very chaotic. It was was so painful. We had so many unanswered questions that people wanted to ask of us.
Mm-hmm. How do you just pull up your kids in the middle of a school year?
That we weren't able to really give answers to.
You know who didn't ask us questions was our kids.
Yeah.
We just said, hey, we're pulling you out of school.
Well, they were pretty excited to get out of school.
Yeah.
I think that was part of it.
Yeah.
And moving from cold winter Winnipeg to sunny Phoenix.
But they were leaving all their friends and they...
But as kids, I don't think they understood it in the moment.
No.
Until months later.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden they felt alone.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an adventure. Our family's always been up for adventure. But so anyhow, that's where we were. Why did we go to Phoenix? Well, why we went to Phoenix is that's where my dad lived. And what we were not doing is running from anything. You know, people on the outside, looking in, they might think, oh, they're just escaping. Oh, they're just, getting out of town, getting out of Dodge.
Running for their life.
Yeah. And it wasn't. We knew that we needed help. And we knew that I knew that I didn't want my children to experience the pain of divorce. I had experienced that in my, early adult years with my parents, and that was devastating. And so I didn't want my kids to experience divorce. And so I thought we needed to really get the help.
And also Leo was here and our church.
Yeah, but it wasn't because of
that's
of
not
Leo,
why we chose Phoenix. But it ended up being amazing.
No. Yes, absolutely. But what it was my dad was here and I wanted my children to be near family.
Right.
And I bring that up because I believe family is that important. Mm-hmm. That we would prioritize family, stay close to family. I think family, within family, it should be a haven of security. Family should cover one another and defend and fight for one another. So I believe the family is very, very important. So with that point made, we moved to Phoenix. You were about 4 months pregnant, and the kids did not know what was happening. Janelle was getting a bit concerned. Mama's putting on a little bit of weight. And so we knew that we needed to tell the children soon. And so your mom was visiting, and that evening she was just, you know, praying, because after dinner we had discussed that this would be the night or the evening that we would share with the kids why we moved, why we're in Phoenix, and that
tell them that I was pregnant
and tell them that you were pregnant.
Yeah. And we were very, very scared for this night because our children are our most precious. They are our life. They are our world. And so, that was a very,
and to devastate their lives
because of my mistake. I think that was for me as a mom, are my children having to pay for my mistake. That just breaks me up. Just even thinking about that.
Yeah. And so that evening after dinner, I just said to the kids, hey, let's get together. You know, we'll have a Meisner family meeting. We were having lots of those during that time because of so much change, you know, that was taking place. So it was very normal. So we were up in our bedroom and the kids came up. But when they entered the room, they saw their mom and dad sitting on the floor crying. And we were just so scared, and that fear gripped their heart as well. It was extremely unsettling. So the first one that came in was our oldest son, Christopher, and he was 15 years old. And immediately you see the fear on his face.
Yes, like, I still remember his eyes.
Something is very wrong.
Yeah.
Our daughter came in next, Janelle, 13 years old, and the same thing. Kind of like, Mama, what's wrong?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then our 10-year-old son, David, comes in. And there we are, this beautiful, beautiful family of five sitting on the floor and with tears in our eyes. But before a word was spoken, I stood up. And this just happened. It wasn't necessarily pre-planned, but just in that moment, I stood up and I went over to the bed and I pulled the large queen-size blanket from the bed. And with Audrey seated on the floor, I took that blanket and I covered her. And then I knelt down beside her and I wrapped my arms around her and I held her close. And then I looked deep into my children's eyes and I said, kids, this is what God does when we make a mistake. He comes to us and he covers us. And then he wraps his arms around us and he holds us close and he begins to whisper, I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. And there Audrey was covered and held in my arms. And I'm beginning to describe to my children, our children, how much I love their mom, how much I cherish her, how beautiful she is. And I am speaking security, hope, and future. I will never leave your mother. And then I said, kids, we are a family, and I'm not going anywhere. Your mom has made a terrible mistake. And as a result, you're going to have a baby brother. Well, Audrey's covered and held in my arms.
I remember being held so tight. I remember you were holding me, and I didn't have to see their faces.
Yeah. And Christopher, you know, hearing those words, mm-hmm. immediately burst into tears.
Yeah.
And cries and cries.
Yeah.
He knew what had happened.
Figured that out, yeah.
My daughter, in the same way, she's just crying and she knew. But it really, surprisingly, with Janelle, it only took her but a few moments, and then she gets this big smile on her face, and she looks at me with this grin and tears rolling down her face, and she says, "Daddy, we're gonna have a baby." But then she sees my pain and she cries again, but she cannot contain
her smile.
The excitement.
Janelle's
and that smile.
That smile
warms the room.
Yeah, that
Daddy,
smile.
Daddy, we're gonna have a baby. Yeah. Audrey's still held in my arms and we're all crying together. And then there's my little guy,
David,
10 years old. And David looks at me and he looks at his brother and sister and he says, "I'm confused. At least I'm not going to be the youngest anymore."
He was so confused.
In that moment, I knew we were going to be okay. Earlier that evening, I had visited a local Target store and I had bought 3 little gifts. And I gave each of these gifts to the kids. And I said, "I want these to be the first gift that you will give your little brother."
Mm-hmm.
And we were a family.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to be okay.
And I just had a visual. Like, I just remembered the house we lived in at that time that God had so supernaturally provided for us, that home. He always has provided supernatural homes for us to live. And we're living in this home, and that was our covering. We were under the shelter. I think of how much God's presence protected us during that year and a half that we lived in that home. That was one of the most crucial sense. We were so susceptible, you know, to hopelessness and all those things, but he covered us and we lived in his home.
Yeah.
That wasn't our house. That was God's house that he had for us.
Yeah.
And we lived there.
Yeah.
And we got through that pregnancy.
Yeah. And it costs, and I need to let listeners know this, it'll cost you.
Yeah.
And it cost us.
Mm-hmm.
But the reward causes that expense, if you want to say, mm-hmm. to pale in comparison. That reward is so very, very rich. What I want to do in this episode, Audrey, is just kind of jump ahead
mm-hmm.
and skip a lot of stories.
Mm-hmm.
The book Marriage Undercover is available in detail and shares many stories. It's a wonderful tool to be able to have in your home. You know, when people, there's so many marriage crises happening, and to be able to give them that story of hope.
Mm-hmm.
But for you and I, it was months now. You're about 4 months pregnant. We have, you know, 5 months to go. And we had good days and we had bad days. We had a couple good days and a couple bad days.
We never really knew which one it would be.
No. And I do want to share this one story. I love this story with Janelle. Janelle has been almost like a second mom to
mm-hmm,
Robert.
Mm-hmm.
And she just
she was 13.
Loved that little boy. Yeah. She loved seeing you pregnant.
Oh,
was
my
in
goodness.
Such great anticipation.
Every day after school, she just put her hands all over my tummy and just kept rubbing my tummy and hugging me and wanting to feel the baby kick and feel that baby
beautiful.
Move.
And yet I still had attitude, you know. Yep. And I remember this one day after work, and you were in the kitchen with Janelle, you know, getting dinner ready. And I was just trying to manage my emotions, manage my anger, and not let it affect the family. And I was, you know, just sitting in the chair in the corner quietly to myself. And Janelle and you were in the kitchen, you know, just, you know, feet from each other. And Janelle is talking to the baby, singing to the baby.
I think I was pretty pregnant by the time.
Oh, yeah,
like
very
eight.
Pregnant.
Yeah.
And she was just rubbing your tummy and singing. And it was just so beautiful. And yet I was hurting on the inside.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, Janelle recognized, oh, Daddy's here.
Yeah, you were kind of staring.
You know, Daddy's here. Daddy's watching.
Yeah.
And this
am
is,
I allowed to be doing
this? This is painful for Daddy.
Yeah.
This pregnancy hurts Daddy.
Yeah.
All of those thoughts gripped her heart.
Yes, her little girl's heart.
And she's just like, oh, and I want Daddy to be okay. And it was just like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And she looks at me. And I looked at her, and we just locked eye to eye. And I said, Janelle, you love that baby with everything you've got.
Hmm.
You just love that little baby.
And she has.
Yeah. So one evening, well, let me share this story, because this is important. This was probably my biggest struggle, you know, going through the pregnancy. And the question that I had was simply this: will I be able to love this baby as my own? Or will this baby forever be a reminder of the betrayal and the rejection, you know, that I experienced?
Yeah.
Will I look at this baby and think, you know, yep, my wife had an affair. Yep, she doesn't love me. Yep, whatever it might be. And I knew, as well, the intense anger that was inside of me. I knew of the rage that I had. And I knew that this baby was innocent. This baby has done nothing wrong, and that this baby does not deserve to be raised by an angry father. All of a sudden, I begin to recognize I'm the problem. I have issues here, and this is completely unfair. And I'm not going to go into, you know, details about that wrestling today. We'll do it in another episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that was my question.
Mm-hmm.
Will I be able to love this baby as my own?
Yeah.
I know what it's like to have a little toddler, you know, pull on your pant leg and crawl up and look you in the eye and say, Daddy. You see, I would role play scenarios and images like this, and I would say, but I'm not your daddy. I'm just trying to be honest and truthful. I'm trying to deal with these images and what's really going on inside of me, because I can't pretend. I'm not going to fake this. Going back to our previous episode, God, I want your 10 out of 10. I'm not just going to settle. I'm not just going to fake it.
Yeah.
So much of my Christian life up until this moment was pretend.
Yeah.
Was faking. Was not really experiencing or knowing. And it's just like, I'm not going to do that. God, I really, really, really want to know you. And what's going on inside of me can't stay. The two cannot coexist. Your love and your redemption and your forgiveness, your kindness, your gentleness, your patience, your peace, and the chaos that I'm experiencing, they can't coexist. So something's got to leave. So that was what was going on inside of me and just this inner turmoil and wrestling. But I wasn't going to give up. I wasn't going to give up. So my pastor and my friend, Leo, he knew of my struggle. And it was almost as though I was continually begging him, just tell me what to do. And we were holding every option. And one of the options was even adoption.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like that one, but as well, I didn't want to be the problem. You know,
mm-hmm.
It was such a confusing time.
I was so willing to do anything you wanted. I just didn't want you to be mad anymore. I didn't want you to be angry. I would have done anything you wanted. And I didn't even know whether I was allowed to bond with this baby because, you know, we might be giving this baby up for adoption. Even up till when I was well along in the pregnancy, we just didn't know exactly.
We just didn't
it was a know. Lot of questions.
Yeah. And in recent years, I've worked with many men, surprisingly many men that have been, that have faced this very same situation. I've been able to walk them through this because I know what they're feeling. I know what they're thinking.
Yes.
And recently, you know, a husband and wife, and she gave birth, you know, to this baby that, you know, he didn't necessarily create.
And it was
their God did. But this couple have, if I can say, weathered through, you know, but they've come out the other side with the great reward of this baby. And he has been, you know, he gave the baby their name and they're starting a family and a life together. I mean, he's not the only one. There are so many others. So as you're hearing this today, I'm just asking that you would hear hope. That it has, this wasn't just me, but God is really more than enough for you. And so this was my question. So my pastor and friend, Leo, he knew what was going on. And I, again, I was just begging him, just tell me what to do. And he refused. And I feel that's an important principle. I think a lot of people may press you, you know, just tell me what to do. And it's like, no, you need to resolve this within your own heart. Don't make a decision based on what I'm telling you to do, but you have to make the decision. You have to make this resolve. You have to make the choice. You take the responsibility. But this one morning, we were having coffee together just real quick before we go to work. And we were talking, but yet I just was pressing him, you know, Leo, what do I do? What do I do? You know, the baby's coming soon. And he just, with sternness, he said, Bob, there is a baby on your doorstep. Now, what do you do? Will you participate with this fatherless generation, or will you become a father to the fatherless? Bob, you've got to grow up. And I was just like, wow. You see, because I'm always wanting to put it off on something or somebody else. I'm wanting to put it off on you. I wanted to put it off on this. I want to put it off rather than taking responsibility myself. I'm the only one that can rightfully respond to this situation. What will you do? So probably just a month later, that evening, your water broke. Janelle was there. She is ecstatic. It's 1 a.m. She's coming with us to the hospital. It took all day. Your mom flies into town. My dad and his wife, they're there. Lois Burkett is there. The kids are there. We're all there. And Janelle and I want to put this detail in. Janelle and I are together, and I knew what I was, I knew the name for this little boy, but I needed a middle name, and we came across the name Theodore, which means divine gift, because, again, I really, really do choose my words carefully now, because I want you to hear that when my son was born, when our son was born, I gave him my name, Robert, because I don't want him to ever question or wonder one day in his life whose boy he is. He is my son. And we gave him the middle name Theodore because he is divine gift. He is a divine gift.
Yes.
And he's not an accident. He's not a mistake. He's not the result of a sexual affair. But just like our other three children, born out of the heart of God, and entrusted to us, we are a family.
I am so grateful, Bob. As you tell this story, every time my heart just melts into you and into your face, and just knowing the gift that you gave all of us by not just receiving Robert into our lives, but being that father that loves him so dearly. Hmm. And that was almost like this year will be 18 years ago. That was 2001. And just this morning, Bob, we were talking about years we were born, and Bob goes, and Robert said to me in the car, I'm so glad I was born in 2001. That's such a great year. Hey, Mom, did you realize that I'm going to be 20? Like, he just loves talking like this. And it was a long time ago, but my heart goes right back there when we had that teeny tiny little 6.8-pound baby.
Just a little guy.
3 weeks early.
Skinny little legs.
And we all held him, and we brought him home the next day from the hospital, and we set him in his car seat and on the dining room table and ate our dinner. And we
kind
all
of
just,
like a centerpiece.
Ate our dinner and went, wow, there he is.
That which was concealed is now revealed.
And may our life begin. And it has. The adventure, the journeys, the challenges of all the children. It's not just us.
Let me say, you use that word challenges.
Yeah. There really hasn't been.
There hasn't.
No.
I feel that's very, very important.
Thank you for telling me that. Yeah.
Because again, when you were pregnant and it was concealed, again, that's when the images in your imagination was creating limitations, worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, what we have gone through and what we have experienced, you know, people say, wow, that's horrible. I can't believe. And it's just like, wait a minute. Now that I'm on the other side, I would exchange what we went through for nothing.
Yeah.
The reward, the benefit, having Robert in our lives.
Yeah.
I can't see my life any other way.
No.
Now, would I recommend this to other people? Absolutely not.
No.
But this is the prime example of how our Redeemer lives.
Yes.
He redeems my life. Redemption. And I know that we've run out of time, but let's just take a look at this real quick. Mm-hmm. He redeems my life. He redeems your life. He restores me back again to that place of opportunity where, again, I get to choose life every single moment of every single day. I'm going to choose life. And as you move away from the devastation, from the crisis moments in our lives, and your Redeemer walks with you and you renew your mind, he gives you a new heart with new desires. And all of a sudden you begin to look back over your life. And people have said this to me. They said, wow, just to imagine, you know, that God would do this to you, that God would bring this into your life, to plan this, to give you such a testimony.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, this isn't what God did. You know, this was a sinful act. This was something that you chose. It was horrible. It was wrong. It never should have happened. But God.
Yes.
You see,
he is surrounded by opportunities and options and recreating. To think that he is such a designer God, creator, designer God, that God's, you know, man's plans are many, but God's purposes reveal. This was a man's plan that I had. This was to have an affair. That wasn't even a plan, but no. I mean, that was something I participated in, made that choice, which was not right. But yet God's purposes could still prevail, even amidst my mistake and failure.
He answered the door of our life.
Yes, he did.
And he says, if you'll abide in me and allow my word to abide in you, if you'll stay under my shelter, I'll cover you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me answer the thief. Let me answer your critics.
Yes.
Let me go to the door to those that want to ravage your life.
Yes, he
answered. Let me defend you. Let me fight for you.
He answered the
door. Let me speak the truth of who you really are. You come to me, I'll cover you. I'll defend you. And I will promote healing in your life. Audrey, here we are, you know, over 18 years later. I can look back, and his redemption in our lives is so extensive and so detailed that you and I could think, wow, God, did you do
this? Did you?
Was this part of it? And the answer is no. But his love is so extravagant. His love so perfect.
His love
his
covers.
His love so complete.
Yes.
He covers me.
Yes.
He holds me.
Yes.
And he whispers in my ear, I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you.
As we close, our prayer is that you will know that you are covered, that as you abide under the shelter of the Most High God, that you live in a place of protection where God will defend you.
Yeah. This day, as you're listening, wherever you might be in a vehicle, you may need to stop. You might need to just put down what you're doing and just take a moment and say, Father, cover me.
Cover me.
Cover me. I need you to cover me. I need to feel your embrace. I need to know that you won't leave me, but that you will answer the door of my life, and you will speak for me, and you will fight for me. You'll heal me. You will heal me. Father, I'm asking, would you give me a new heart, new desires? I choose to abide in you.
Until next time, feel the love. We are cheering you on in your relationships. We believe that you can and will have the life that is full of safety, honesty, and kindness. Share this podcast. You know somebody right now that needs to hear that they're covered. Share this podcast with your friends and family. Leave your comments below. We love you. Until next time, bye-bye.